Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your podcast book club. I am Christina, one of your hosts. I'm here, as always, with my book besties, Anna and Kim.
Hi, everyone.
And tonight, we are so thrilled and honored and excited, and all the words, to be joined as well by USA bestselling author of the Malediction novels, the Dark Shore series, and of course, the Bridge Kingdom series, Danielle L. Jensen.
Yay.
Hi, Danielle. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk books and writing and all things fun.
So are we. So excited.
If you can tell by our huge smiling faces.
I know. That's good. If you were all frowning at me, I'd be nervous.
Okay, so before we jump in, really quick spoiler warning, spoiler alert, we will be talking all things Bridge Kingdom, Traitor Queen. You are warned. Spoilers are coming.
Yes.
All the spoilers coming your way. Okay, Anna, are you ready?
I am ready to start us off.
Yay!
Like a quick fast five, rapid fire, just so that our listeners can hear some fun facts about you.
Ready.
So, one, what is your most reread book?
You know, I used to reread books all the time when I was young, but I never have time anymore.
So, I feel that.
Like, I'd have to go really far back in time to my childhood to find a reread.
Oh, I know,
let's just say A Court of Mist and Fury.
That is our most reread book. Isn't everyone?
That's my most adult reread book.
Well, I've had to reread it for research as well. So.
If you had to pick one of your series, which would you love to see adapted for the screen?
I would say Dark Shores, but Bridge Kingdom is probably the most feasible.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, both would be amazing, let's be real.
Yeah.
When one of your books gets published, do you have like a special way of celebrating?
Usually I like to refresh my Amazon rankings about every 10 minutes.
Well,
I start the day with tea and coffee and then move to alcohol as the day progresses.
I was wondering, I was like, geez, there are like champagne involved, maybe something stronger.
And I'm not alone. I don't think that there's many authors that don't do this particular routine.
That's good to know. What book or author do you credit for making you a forever reader?
Oh, I would say David Eddings. My dad read his books to me when I was really little. So,
really?
That's where I started with fantasy. My dad wasn't much for kids' books, so he just read chapter by chapter through. Yeah, other kids in grade one were getting, like, picture books or whatever. And
right.
I was in the seven-book fantasy series.
Let's just really jump in here.
That's so
Kim
funny.
And I were talking about it, and she was like, Babysitter's Club, and I was like, for me it was Nancy Drew.
Yeah,
and I did read all of these by myself, but I would we have to go all the way to the beginning here.
Yeah.
He also read me Watership Downs, which traumatized me
as
a child.
I read that book in middle school and it traumatized me. Yeah.
I know, seriously, me too.
That's I can imagine elementary school. So okay, so last question. This one's my favorite. What's your go-to music genre when you're driving alone in your car and you just want to jam out?
I have Sirius Satellite in my car and I listen to Hits 1.
I do too!
Because I'm really, and I also, like, I have,
it covers all the bases.
Well, you have, like, six buttons on my car, and so it's Hits 1, and then the 90s,
yes.
And then Lithium, because I am a 90s girl.
Yes,
And the 2000s.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, a few, like, random ones for when I'm just surfing. But it's it's really I like pop music. So if there's a Taylor Swift song, I'm
We're huge Taylor fans.
My 3-year-old twins demanded Bad Blood this morning when we got in the car for the carpool.
You know, like, what my kids love? Astronaut in the Ocean, and they can sing it, and my kids are really little. I'm like, please don't sing it at school. Please don't sing it at school.
That's so funny. Yeah,
they like try to do like the really fast parts.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that.
Kids are so hip. That is awesome.
They're very hip.
I'm like, some of those are daddy words. Don't say them.
Yeah.
We keep that for home.
We do that. Yeah. I do the same thing.
Okay, so before we dive into the books, we'd love to talk a little bit about your journey to become an author. Some of our listeners might not know you had a career in corporate finance for years before ultimately...
Well, not like years and years. How old do you think I am?
For years!
Decades!
We've had a career in corporate finance.
I did.
Before then leaving and becoming an author.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you say that your, you know, journey to become an author has shaped or affected your writing process or your writing as a whole?
Well, obviously I have a couple of university degrees under my belt, which if nothing else teaches you some degree of discipline, and then working in finance, again, more discipline. So I would say that I was well prepared to manage my own self as my, I'm my own boss. Mm-hmm. So if I don't make myself work, no one's going to do it. So, so I'd say any sort of job where diligence is required is going to be, you know, really helpful for that aspect of it. As far as how my actual degrees and work experience have helped me, certainly on the business side of things with my indie publishing stuff, I have a better understanding of a lot of like the finance and the account, because I mean you have to do business accounting because you are your own business, dealing with publishers. You know, I had a lot of experience dealing in a professional capacity, so that was no big shock or revelation to me. And and then of course the marketing skills that you learn and pick up in more in my degree, because I did finance and I wasn't selling anything. I was doing long-term financing with bankers, so they were selling things to me. But you know, I think it's just more of a state of mind. But the problem with finance is they don't reward you for daydreaming about like dragons and fae princes and stuff.
They
like
don't.
That. You know, when you're sitting in a meeting, you're not supposed to be thinking about like hot fae sex or anything like that.
You are not rewarded for thinking about that.
So unfortunate.
It was just not really where I was meant to be, because that is where my brain goes.
Yes.
And we love you for that, Danielle.
We do. When you decided to become an author, was it always like you definitely wanted to write fantasy for sure? Or was there ever a thought of like maybe another genre?
So how I actually started was one of my coworkers at the time was like, we should write a romance novel because romance novels are formulaic and really easy. And I was like, yeah, that's a sweet idea, but I'm not a team player. I'm going to go do this by myself. And so I started trying to do that. And the irony being is that I didn't read a lot of category romance. Fantasy was always my thing. So I started writing it, but it's not easy. And it required way more skills than I certainly had when I first started. So yeah, it was terrible. It was like this weird sort of Lost ripoff romance novel. It was so bad. Like, it's, I don't even have it. It is like deleted on many computers ago.
Oh my God, I love
Burned forever.
But then I was like, you know, this is stupid. Why am I trying to write something that I don't even read? And I started writing what is now Dark Skies. It originally started as a portal fantasy with Lydia coming from our world to this fantasy world. Oh. And I thought I was super original. Not original. But I wrote it, and it did change, and it became quite a bit different through various iterations. But that was the first book that I completed and edited it and tried to query unsuccessfully. My actual agent form rejected this book when I first queried it. And I had I had the form rejection email, and I sent it back to her because that series is her favorite of all of my books. So
right, you're like, so remember so, when
she, and she said, you know, I should feel bad, but you've actually improved a lot since then.
Wow,
that is so funny.
Yeah, so that is where I started, and then that book never went anywhere until a much rewritten version of it. I wrote another dystopian post-apocalyptic type book that kind of got close. I actually would love to revisit that one day.
Oh, yeah. I love dystopian.
Yeah. And then I wrote Stolen Songbird, which was the one that crossed the finish line. So
yeah.
That was actually one of the first, Stolen Songbird was one of the first, oh my God, now I'm drawing a complete blank. I'm also watching Lord of the Rings with my husband. I keep thinking dwarfs.
Trolls.
Thank you. I was like, all I'm thinking is dwarfs. Troll, like one of the first books I read with trolls in it. And
I mean, in fairness, they're not very troll-like.
Well, but it was interesting to read because I had to wrap my brain around this like kind of very different, they weren't beautiful.
Except for Tristan.
I was about to say, well, we needed Tristan.
Tristan. But it was just, I mean, my sister and I both read it together and then I got hooked and then I read Bridge Kingdom.
So. Oh, I'm glad that you liked it.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's funny because I haven't read it, and sometimes people ask me questions about that series and about like obscure characters. I don't remember who that is.
For the first time ever.
Because your brain is like, you're working on so many other things. It's like you're probably immersed in whatever
worlds.
Yeah, I tend to think forward versus back. So I'm always thinking about characters that I'm working on or that I plan on working on. Yeah. I don't sit around thinking about Tristan and Cecile. I don't sit around thinking about Lara and Aran either, sorry.
Yeah.
Because that's okay. To me they're history, and I wouldn't be very good at my job if all I ever thought about was the things that I have already written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you've already read them.
Yeah. Because you have to think of something new.
Like Karis and Zara.
Exactly.
Yes.
We're very excited about.
So excited.
I'm glad.
Well, speaking of Lara and Aran.
Yes.
I want to kick off some of our Bridge Kingdom questions.
Of course.
And we're going to start with world building. You do such an incredible job of creating these various cultures, climates in the Bridge Kingdom world. I mean, I speak for everyone here who is from Texas that like you literally make us feel humidity when we were reading them. And also the way you told the time passing with the storm seasons. Mm-hmm. So there's just no hitting us over the head with exposition.
Yeah,
Where did the inspiration for this world come from? And then what was your creative process for putting it to paper?
Inspiration is always a difficult thing for me because it's rarely one thing. So I had the concept of the Bridge Kingdom in my head for years because I was busy with the Stolen Songbird series and with Dark Shores. So I didn't have time to work on it, but it just cooked in my brain. And so I knew that I wanted this woman to be sent to this impenetrable kingdom that somehow was controlling trade between nations, and she was being sent to infiltrate them. And that at the end of the first book, her plans would come to fruition. And so I knew that that was what I wanted. And so it becomes this, you know, how do I create a world where there's this pinch point on trade? Like, how does that happen? Yeah. And, you know, at first I had sort of like a ravine that was long. And I'm like, that's stupid. And so, you know, I'm thinking, because, yeah, it was originally kind of a wintry climate that I, and rocky and wintry, that was in my head. Oh, and I'm not exactly sure. I think it was because I was watching Moana a lot with my kids.
Really?
That I was just watching all this tropical stuff. And it's not at all based on Moana, because that's, you know, a different culture and all that sort of stuff. But that, you know how they like do crazy things with the boats and all that sort of stuff. And I got to thinking, like, sort of set up a Central America looking world, but islands, and then, well, why wouldn't they sail, make the storm season? And so the world was built around the plot point of one nation controlling trade and all the other nations wanting control of this nation.
Oh, fascinating. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense, though. Like, how would they control it?
And that's obviously the big driving point of the entire series.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, really cool. I think it was Moana, because I remember watching, and at the end when she's steering the boat in to go fight Taka, and I saw it 8 billion times with my kids, because it is really my favorite Disney movie, but
it's so good.
So it's not based on that movie, but I think that's how inspiration works, is you see things and they sink into your mind, and then you're like, oh, it comes together with other ideas to create something that works.
Absolutely
fascinating.
So the first chapter in Bridge Kingdom is such an attention grabber. Like, we all literally read it and we're like, what the hell? Like, it just grabs your attention right away. And so you mentioned on your website that there were actual, like, various different versions of that first chapter, and I would love to know kind of, you know, the process of going through those different versions and ultimately the journey that brought you to the one that made it to the book.
So that chapter, I had in my head for a long time. It was one of the ones that it was very strongly envisioned in my brain, with her at the table with her sisters and her father making this announcement and then them all dropping dead.
But, so crazy.
Yeah. But no, in my original version, she kills them.
when we read that, we were like, what?
Yeah. So I'm writing away and I'm like, they're dead. And dead. I just had her be a little, she was way more of a ruthless fundamentalist.
Yeah.
But it gets to the point where you say, well, how can I redeem this character?
Yeah.
And there is a limit of what my readership is going to take. And killing all your sisters to become queen is a tough sell. Yeah. It's a tough sell. It's going to take a better author than I am to make this happen. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to kill them. I'm going to fake their deaths. And then once I had that in my mind, I'm like, oh, this makes a lot more sense, because I could use them in the second book to help rescue them. So it really did make a lot more sense to keep them alive. Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't, in that next version, I didn't have the revelation that they were alive come until the very end.
Oh.
The thing was, it was still, yes, she was redeemed because they're alive, but people weren't connecting with her because they thought that she was murder.
They spend the whole book thinking that,
And my agent was like, nope. she said, you're going to have to tell people sooner. And so she said, it's just really hard to connect with somebody who's, I don't know what the technical word is for killing all your sisters. It's not fratricide.
It's
got to be something similar.
Yeah.
Sister side.
Sister side.
It's not good. So, you know, it's not ideal.
So then I changed it so that it was revealed in chapter 2, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
That they're still alive.
Yeah.
So it was entirely on trying to have a redeemable character that people could get behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and speaking of all the characters, was there a character that you particularly relate to in the series?
In just the first two books?
Oh! Well, I mean, no, you could tease us, please.
Yeah.
Speaking of that third book, my proofread reader just sent the proofing back for that, so I just saw her email pop up.
That's
so
exciting.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
So the print edition is underway. Yes.
Yay.
What character do I relate to the most? It would be Lara or Karis. Mm-hmm. And they're very similar in a lot of ways.
Ooh, okay. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited to read about Karis.
Me too.
I know, me too.
Yeah, nobody understands him yet. Only me and the handful of people who have read really know who he is.
Yes.
Because you only saw him through Aaron's eyes. And Aaron was like, this guy is such a jackass. And he is. Don't get me wrong. He is. But probably one of those two.
Okay.
I do like morally ambiguous characters with a lot of shades of gray. Aaron is not shades of gray. He is the noble, honorable one, which is actually extremely difficult character type for me to write, which is also one of the reasons that Zara was a bigger challenge for me, because she's also not shades of gray. She's very honor-driven, and that is always a harder type for me to write, but it never really makes sense to me to have two morally gray characters get together, because I feel that that's a lot of gray. That's a lot of gray.
You need somebody.
A lot of gray.
Somebody to run the straight arrow.
Well, speaking of Aaron, I do have to say that
love him.
He is, we do love Aaron so much. Like, he is just, he is one of our absolute favorite, and I think most realistic male leads ever.
Also, he's also the most emotionally available.
Yeah.
I felt like, of the two, and he really is the driving force in the relationship. So was that a conscious decision to write him that way? Or did that kind of come about organically? I know you said that in your previous answer that you don't like to blend two morally ambiguous characters together. So was that maybe why you, was there more
well,
to that?
Well, I think that, well, I knew Lara first, and I think you're trying to think about what she would find appealing and what would fill certain voids for her, and think about the life that she had and who would help her move past that.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be a character like her brother, who is equally damaged in a very similar way. So he's carrying a lot of the same, he's thinking a lot the same way. I needed somebody to be able to disrupt that thought pattern. And I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not sure if that's actually true or if that's just like writer bullshit, but
I mean, it worked.
It worked, yeah.
But, you know, they say that opposites attract to a certain extent. But I think that you want to be with somebody that you admire. You know, Lara doesn't necessarily admire people like her. She admires people who are a little bit moral and a little bit more moral than she is anyway. And and honorable, because that wasn't how she was really raised. So she's looking for someone that she inspires her. And so his character was built in a lot of ways as far as why he is the way he is. I mean, it's so often the case that you're writing these characters with terrible pasts and terrible parents or terrible tragedy. And I can't talk here, but he had a really awesome life. I mean, living in Ithacana is difficult, but he was raised in a loving family. He wanted for nothing. He's close with his sister. Yes, his parents died, but they died when he was an adult. So
yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
he's pretty balanced guy. So which is definitely, in the fantasy romance genre, it's more typical to put the kind of emotional baggage that I gave Lara onto the male character. You know, these dark, brooding, damaged guys, which I love that character type, but I just don't, because I was going that direction with her, I didn't want to go that direction with him. He's a good guy. He's the kind of guy that in real life you would want to marry.
Totally.
Whereas most of the guys that we like in books would actually be terrible partners. So
yes,
that's true. Absolutely.
Good point. That's what we said. I was like, Aaron might like me. Like, he might actually like me.
He's like a real person.
Yes.
I just love him.
I feel like he felt like such a refreshing male lead because of that. Like, he was not like broody alpha male fae.
Yeah.
You have to pull my emotions out of
him. Yeah.
And that was so nice to read.
Yeah.
Well, he went into it all with good intentions, right?
Yes.
Yes, he did.
She did not.
Not so much the case for her. So something else that really struck us about these books, just how emotionally invested we are in what's going on in every scene. Like, we are crying or on the verge of tears, and then two pages later, like, the most stressed out we could possibly be ever. With, like, the sharks and the snakes and the
or the letter.
Oh, God.
Oh, and the letter.
Snake Island. Terrifying.
Yes. Snake Island. But does your writing process differ from, like, you're sitting down to write this beautiful romantic scene as opposed to like Snake Island or the sandstorm or the sharks or like the stressful things.
Yeah, I could write a scene in Snake Island and probably 10% of the time as it would take to write an emotional or intimate scene. For one, it's the style of the prose. It tends to be shorter, clippier sentences when you're in action. Mm-hmm, you're not going for poetry. You're going for action. You don't want to slow down the pace by having an unwieldy or a sentence that takes a little bit more thought to get through. So you'll see in most authors will have shorter sentences, shorter paragraphs in action scenes.
Totally.
And I just find that, I don't know, maybe this sounds bad, I have to be a little bit less thoughtful about word choices and language choices when I'm in an action scene, because not that I can do a bad job, when I'm writing, say, like a sex scene, each motion is intended to capture so much, or it's not just the lust, it's not just the physical motion, it's everything. Whereas when they're running from a snake, there's fear, and that's it. And so
much fear.
I find that each sentence requires 10 times the thought, and I rewrite them over and over again, and I'm so cognizant of word choice and resonance and building the emotional escalation through the scenes. So emotional scenes or intimate scenes take me forever to write, forever. And not because I don't know what I want to write per se, it's just that the actual drafting takes me a long time. But whereas I feel, I don't know, I get caught up in an action scene and I'm just like, we're running for stakes. I find action very easy to write. It's one of the easiest things, although I do really like dialogue. So conversation scene is also, I don't know if I'm good at it, but I like writing them.
You are. The banter is top notch.
Yes.
Okay, so speaking of the romantic scenes, we all love a good slow burn. And I think something that you do really well with Laura and Aaron is kind of this amazing sexual tension between the two of them. Can you tell us a little bit about what went into that, as well as your process behind kind of the placement of the sexual scenes within the plot as a whole?
There is no time like the first time in fiction, in my opinion. So the build up to that first sex scene, like where they actually have sex, not just foreplay type stuff, is the best. And the moment when they first come together, you can never really recreate that. It's just never as good as a reader, or at least for me as a reader, every time after that. The first time is the best time. That is one of the reasons why I do like slow burn, is because I have oftentimes the full book to, or close to the full book to, build to that. But by the same token, you want to throw in some degree of coming together and intimacy, as with Lara and Aaron. I wanted it in a way the first time, which is when she's drugged him and he wakes up while she's snooping his room.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
To kind of shock Lara, because it was definitely not what she planned, but also it is the first time that she's ever kissed a man and been intimate with a man. I mean, she's learned. She knows all there is to know, academically speaking. In theory. So, she's no like blushing maiden by any stretch of the imagination, but she's never done it. Which is why she's not without some degree of confidence, because she's trained. But also rattled by the moment. And I wanted it to kind of capture the duplicity of the relationship in that point of time in the book. So she's there with bad intentions. And so I wanted the first sort of kissing scene to reflect the relationship as it stood then, which is him being genuine and her not. But also her kind of feeling things that maybe she didn't quite expect. So
totally,
that was that. And then it becomes like, you're working towards a moment, with what certainly Lara trying to restrain herself, Aaron not wanting to push because he thinks he was going to be a good guy, right? He's going to let her come to him. He's not going to be like, we're married. You have to have sex with me right now. Because he wants it to be like, he watched his parents who were in love. So
he's hopeful.
He's hopeful for that, even though he understands the situation. So I built the characters in order to allow the slow burn, because sometimes it's not genuine. Yeah. Sometimes you're like, there's literally no reason why you guys shouldn't be banging pelvises right now, other than the fact the author does not want you to. And that becomes frustrating.
Yes.
So
totally.
That is the line you always have to walk with slow burn and building tension, is that you can only drag it out to a certain extent, and then it becomes not believable.
Right.
Especially,
it's a very fine line.
You're working towards that, and then as far as the timing of the actual sex scene, it had to come after she decided to, you know, give up her pursuit of Ithacana. You know, she realized she's in love with him and he's forgiven her because he knows at least most of the truth. And so it was a very
They're
very genuinely together now, and I could make them genuinely and emotionally come together as represented by this physical moment. And it was timed to be at that same moment.
Right. Love it.
But I mean, it is hard, because there's certainly a large subset of the readership that's looking for a lot more spice. And it's, I find that, Karis and Zara have more sex scenes, but it's reflective of them. But I don't like it to be gratuitous, because to me that's boring. I understand other readers feel entirely differently, that some people really like just lots of it, and that's fine. But I start to skim in books like that because I'm there for the tension, I'm there for the angst. And if I am just literally reading like a voyeur, I guess, and I'm not invested emotionally in an emotional moment, as a reader, it's not satisfying to me. And I write primarily to my own expectations, like desires, what would I want as a reader?
Yeah.
So that's the reason.
And just the use of tension between them is, it's just so well done. Oh, that moment right when she decides she's going to go write on all the pieces of paper right before that. And they're like, he's kneeling there and he just got hurt. And she's like breathing and she's like in the courtyard. And she's
in the eye of the hurricane.
Yeah, I'm the hurricane.
It's so good.
Oh my gosh. And you could just tell she's like, I'm feeling things. I shouldn't be feeling these things.
I'm freaking out.
Go write on the things. And you're like, no. Oh, God.
You just want to shake her.
So
The first time we all read it, we were like, okay, how many pieces of paper were there? Okay, there was the cat, but let's count it out. Where were we?
Oh, we spent an embarrassing amount of time
on the letter.
But one of them's in the waste bin. But did they turn the thing over? We had so much fun.
And it's funny because, you know, people are like, well, you know that that letter's going to come out. So I knew it was going to happen. I'm like, you're supposed to know.
Yeah.
You're supposed to
know. You're not like a clever boots because you figured it out.
It's obviously coming back.
You're supposed to have this sense of dread.
You do. You have it the whole rest of the book. You're waiting.
Oh, God.
Okay.
We could just do this. All right. What are questions? Okay. Anna, do you want to ask yours about
If you had to pick, which character would you like to go to dinner with?
Karis.
Ooh.
Yes.
Definitely Karis.
Karis has a lot of answers. This is making me very excited.
I love Karis. Karis is very witty, and he's a good conversationalist. Mm-hmm. So you would not be sitting there in silence with him. And he is unexpected, and he swears a lot. And he is simultaneously like the smooth prince, but also can be like a little bit crass.
Oh,
so
perfect.
You never really know what you're going to get from him, because he plays a lot of different sides of himself depending on who he's with. So he adapts to who he's with. So one of the things that was so critical with him meeting Zara and with them coming together is that she is basically the only person that he is his true self with. So
I love that.
I love that.
I love him. So,
Oh my God.
I mean, the scene with Karis and Aaron, when Aaron's being is held captive and he leaves the book. I loved the dialogue in that scene. It was, you could tell Karis was, he just had such a playfulness to him in such like a clearly dire situation.
He's actually very stressed out in that conversation.
And it's so well done. And I was, it made me, so when I found out book three was about Karis and Zara, I was like, that was actually the scene that I read that I was like, made me really excited to then see more of him.
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting when you switch point of views. And this will be very interesting to see how readers react to this, because I think that the situation that I could probably point to as an example is how Nesta doesn't like Resend.
Oh,
yes.
And she has her reasons, but it's hard for readers to separate having seen him through Feyre's eyes.
Yeah.
So they see him the way Feyre sees him, and they had to change the way that they were seeing him in order to like kind of set aside all of that as if they didn't know it and see it through different eyes. And that's very difficult to do because you have all this existing knowledge and you're like, no, but he's this way, he's great, all this sort of stuff. But you have to recognize that Nesta's experience with him is not the same as what her sister's experience with him is. She wasn't in her sister's head. She doesn't know all the things that her sister knows. So
true.
Totally.
You almost have to erase a lot of your existing knowledge of a character in order to really see them through the new character's eyes. So you're seeing now Lara and Aaron through Karis and Zara's eyes. And they don't know all the things that readers know.
Yeah.
Karis thinks his sister's a murdering bitch.
Like, of course he does.
Oh, because he thinks that she killed all of his sisters.
No, not that. The book starts around the same time of the invasion. So he knows that she orchestrated this invasion. He doesn't know that she didn't intend for it to happen.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know that. No one really knows that except
really
for
knows that, like, she didn't send the letter to the...
Yeah. So Karis thinks that she went in, betrayed her husband, stabbed in the back, caused the invasion of a nation, caused thousands of people to be killed, and then, like, fucked off.
And he's like, bye.
Yeah. So... he does not have good thoughts about her.
Oh, wow. And okay.
That makes sense.
It will be interesting to see how readers react to his opinion of her. Because he does not think highly of her, certainly in the beginning, because he doesn't know all the things that we know. He doesn't know that she actually tried to go back on all of this, that she truly loves Aaron, that she didn't want any of this to happen. He doesn't know. Mm-hmm. So it will be really interesting seeing how readers respond to him saying these things about Lara.
Totally, yeah.
And he also thinks Aaron is a bit of a dumb fuck for thinking, like believing, for starters, that Lara was there under anything other than duplicitous evil intentions.
I can see that point of view. Mm-hmm.
So he does not actually have high opinions of our two original leads.
That is so interesting and makes total sense.
Yeah.
Zara is less judgmental and it's touched her less, so she's not as opinionated on them. But it'll be really interesting to me to see how readers react to Karis's initial viewpoint, certainly of his sister especially, because he does not know what the readers know. He only knows what everyone knows.
Wow. That's going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you had to choose, where in the Bridge Kingdom would you like to live and why?
Well, I really liked Midwatch until Aaron threw a tantrum and burned it down.
Come on, Aaron.
Damn it, Aaron.
Yeah. So minus the snakes.
Minus the snakes.
That would suck.
Oh my God, the snakes.
Ditto, I can't with the snakes.
I would probably live in Velikata, where Zara's from. It's very it's very civilized.
Less civilized. Less snakes.
All right, so I am going to change topics for a little bit. You obviously have a very active social media account. And as a new podcast, we've had to learn how to navigate the social media world. And it was a learning process. So social media has become such an integral part of like promoting work nowadays, as opposed to like 10 years ago. How would you say social media has shaped your industry for better or worse?
It's certainly made a much more connectivity between authors and readership. Mm-hmm. And it's more accessible because it's not just the people who, primarily it would have been Americans before, who had a lot more access to, I mean, a lot of American authors. So now mm-hmm. the whole world can access, yeah. doesn't matter where you are. So that I think that is the one of the biggest things that has changed. I think the darker side is that a lot more of the sales performance and marketing and all of that is now on the author's plate where it wasn't before. Mm-hmm. So whereas 15 years ago, let's say, authors were just writing for the most part. There was yeah. tours and stuff, but they weren't spending hours on Instagram.
Right.
Now probably half my job is managing the various ways that I connect with readers. Yeah. So there's that. And it can be hard to never escape the criticism or the feedback in general. Mm. So whereas before, and what we can still say 15 years ago, that there wouldn't have been this reviewer culture that we have now.
Mm. Yeah.
It wasn't always in your face. I mean, there was yeah. trade reviews, and if you met people, they would presumably tell you what they feel, but people are a lot nicer usually in person than they are online.
It's a lot easier to hide behind a keyboard.
So I think that authors have had to develop a lot thicker skin since social media has dominated our world, because it's constant. You're constantly yeah. inundated, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not always when you will expect it. You know, if I'm scrolling on TikTok, I frequently come across posts about the Bridge Kingdom, and they're not always nice. And I'm not seeking it out. It's fine. People are allowed to say what they want. I'm not seeking it out. Sure. It right. just comes right. up in scrolling. And, you know, it's sort of like that car accident. It's hard to turn away. So you sit there and listen to the 3-minute video of someone talking about how your book sucks, and then you kind of feel crappy.
Yeah.
And so, and it doesn't happen really with my other books as much, but because this book was popular on TikTok, it comes up a lot more. Yeah. But and it's fine. Like, I don't want to discourage people from saying what they want to say, and mm-hmm. I certainly don't feel that anyone has an obligation to like my book. You can like whatever you want to like, but the mm-hmm. It's hard to escape.
Yeah.
The constant feedback, and it does get into your head a little bit.
Is there a way that you how are you cognizant of your mental health when going through social media? Is there a way that are there tools that you use to kind of help navigate it?
I certainly don't follow my own hashtags.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I don't look for it.
Yeah.
I try to avoid looking. And I do have someone that goes through and kind of tries to untag me from things that are really shitty so that I don't see them. And a lot of authors have that as sort of like a screening system.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The thing is the more success you have, the more success a particular book has, the more of that there is. Sure. So people are generally kinder about books that are like more mid-list or less popular. As soon as you become more popular or a hype book or something that people are just talking about a lot, the people who really like to voice their negative opinions really come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
But that really like to be contra to hype, contra to trend.
Mm, sure. So they're
well, everybody liked this book, but I freaking hated it. Let me tell you why.
It's cool not to like it. That's how
So, which is fine, again, but I try not to see that stuff because it is soul sucking.
No, I feel you would have it.
And it does bother some people more than others. So
Okay, so a few really quick book 3 questions before we wrap up. So so for anyone who doesn't know already, book 3 takes place at the exact same time period as Trader Queen. Mm-hmm. Was coming back to that timeline from a different perspective challenging, or was it fun to kind
of... It was a nightmare.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I thought you were going to say, because like Dark Shores, Dark Skies.
No, because in Dark Shores and Dark Skies, it's just the very beginning. And also, Dark Shores and Dark Skies was originally one book, so I knew how it happened.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yes.
So the book three. I'm almost called it by its title.
We would bleep it out. Your secret.
We would
keep your secret.
The title is in the Traitor Queen. I'll tell you that. And it's something that Arryn says. There's a clue for you.
Okay, we'll be hunting for that.
All right.
So
gonna go reread Traitor Queen.
I typically write in three act structures. So the first act takes place in Narastus, and it was all new. It had to fit in with certain timeline pieces, mm-hmm. but I could more or less just write it however I felt like writing, as long as I had a few beats that happened at the correct times and that at the length of time that I had worked.
Yeah.
The scenes that take place in mm-hmm. Ventzia at the same time as when Arryn is there, mm-hmm. I probably rewrote the middle section 10 times.
Wow.
I probably spent a year on about 15 chapters, had several mental breakdowns about it.
Oh.
And the reason was, there was so much stuff that had to happen, but I didn't want the readers to know what was going to happen because it had to be a separate story. So I had to create a new story within the story, but still meet all the same plot beats.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And it was awfully hard. So,
oh, I bet.
Because there are specific moments that happen.
Yeah. So there's conversations that occurred. There's things that happen. There's things that know happen, but those can't be the moments of excitement because you know what happens.
You know what happened. Yeah.
So I'm building a separate intrigue, separate aspects of the story at the same time within certain plot beat framework that I had already established in Traitor Queen. Yeah. And I will never do this again.
Okay. Ever. Noted.
And this is the one and only spot.
So I think it did. I really do believe it came together well in the end, but it was very difficult for me.
Sure,
because one of the reasons is I don't write. I'm not an outliner. I like to just write how I feel like writing. But mm-hmm. I basically had a set in stone outline of certain things that had to happen.
Yeah.
And right. I had to work within that framework, and it was very difficult for me as a writer. Mm-hmm. And then the end, again, there's certain beats that had to be met, but because we're not really, they're away from the Lara and Arryn,
right?
I had more liberty, and I was not as stymied as I was by the middle. So it was so hard. I do not recommend anyone ever do that. It is very difficult.
Do not recommend.
No.
Were Karis and Zara always going to be our next leads? Or when did you decide that you wanted to, like, tell their story?
Well, when Karis became almost immediately an integral part of Traitor Queen, and Zara came to being in a lot of ways to give him proper motivations for his actions.
Mm.
So it was as I was developing Karis's involvement with Arryn, and I needed it to be realistic, as much as anything is realistic in this world, that he would be doing this.
Okay.
So, and then once I knew that, then I started building upon it. And because I had this pre-existing conflict between Meridrina and Volcata, you know, this endless war, this generational war of enmity, it really worked very well for creating forbidden love, enemies to lovers type.
Love it.
Love it.
So.
Two of my favorite tropes. Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Together.
We love it.
So wait. There's drama that you don't even know about. It is so much worse than you
We're
even
so
know.
We're so ready.
Because I still had a lot of liberty to create their characters and to create their backstory and to understand them more. I wasn't totally locked in. They had to be the same people as I've set up, but as I got to know them better, a lot more revelations of course happen as I'm going through this, and to make the plot juicier, and I don't know, I'm pulling in characters that I've used. So, you know, Aunt Coraline is super close with Karis.
Coraline!
So they are like tight.
That's full fun.
She was basically, after his mother was murdered, his mother and Lara's mother.
Right.
Was murdered, Coraline effectively became his mother.
Aww.
So he is super close with her and definitely shaped his character. But you're going to see not a totally different side of her, but you're going to see that Arryn definitely was not getting the whole picture. And there was a whole lot of stuff going on that Arryn had no idea about. Oh. Arryn was just like in his cell being sad. Yeah. And there's all this stuff happening.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So exciting.
And the middle of the book is like hardcore intrigue, but also lots of sexiness and drama and revelations and all that sort of stuff. But it's very political intrigue rich.
Yes.
So.
Oh gosh. I'm so excited.
Do we have like a tentative release?
I can't tell you. I know what it is.
I didn't know. I just thought I'd ask.
No, Audible really has told me that I can't say anything to anyone.
Okay. Audible has strict rules.
Yeah, so, but I'll say it's not that far away.
Awesome.
Yay!
We'll take it.
So
to wrap us up, and to kind of just leave our listeners and ourselves wanting more.
Yeah.
What three words would you use to describe book three?
It's just so hard. Three. Sexy, for sure.
Oh, sexy.
It's sexy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Karis isn't just good with words.
Yes, loving that.
So, he's a ladies man. So, sexy for sure. Intriguey. It's not even a word.
It is. We're making it a word.
Intriguey.
Love that.
Twisty.
Ooh.
Twisty.
And heartbreaking.
Oh! No!
No!
I don't know if I like that.
See, but that's like leaving us wanting more.
Oh my god, totally.
Oh my gosh.
I'm both excited and terrified about this release, of course, because when you're switching to new characters, you just don't know if people are going to connect the same way. Like, you don't have as much comfort as you would in a typical sequel where you're writing from the same people. And so it's very nerve-wracking, given the success of the first book and how people feel about Lara and Arryn, to be presenting new characters. Mm-hmm. And it's not more the same. It's in a lot of ways, if you approached it as a new series, you'd be better served, because the characters are totally different, the setting's different, and the vibe is different, because it has to fit the characters and the plot. So it's not more the same. It's just not.
Right.
And I think that that's good, because it gives you something new and exciting. Nobody wants derivative content. But anyone who is coming into it thinking that they're going to get like another Bridge Kingdom in that sense of that wild danger, it's not in the wilds. It's in totally different locations. So it's, I love it, but it is very different. And that's always scary. It's in a lot of ways the way I felt when I switched characters in the Dark Shores series. So that worked out. I hope it works out half as well.
That worked out very well.
So if it works out half as well as it did switching over to Killian and Lydia, I will be very, very happy.
Oh my gosh.
We cannot wait to learn more about them.
We cannot wait.
I it's all coming. Like everything is ready. It's just,
oh my gosh,
they have a plan, and I am beholden to the plan.
Yes,
I understand.
I will do as I've been told, and so
yes,
it is coming, and it will all come at once as far as the information and and then it's go time.
Awesome.
Yay,
oh my gosh, I can't wait.
We cannot wait.
Well, this has been so great. Thank you, Danielle.
Yes, thank you so much, Danielle.
It's been great talking to you.
We're very honored to have you on.
Yes,
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So you can follow Danielle on Instagram at Danielle L. Jensen. And you can follow us on Instagram at Flights of Fantasy Podcast. And please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And until next time, cheers and happy reading.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, happy reading. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
So fun.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.